Weencast, a Ween podcast with Shane and Rory.
Hey, what's up? This is Shane.
And this is Rory.
And this is Weencast. And we welcome you to a new episode. What's going on, everybody?
Yabba dabba doo!
Hell yeah, little Flintstones? That's what I'm talking about.
Dude, I've been thinking about it. They're in our, the vitamins are in my cupboard.
Oh, nice. Purple Barney. That was always my favorite. I want a purple Barney.
You know it.
Well, this will be our 60th episode. So happy 60 episodes, Rory.
Yeah, dude. Shane, likewise. Damn, 60 episodes? Shit.
Feels good, man. Feels good.
A lot of water under the bridge.
Yeah. I want to say it's been, what, 5-6 years maybe?
I keep forgetting when we actually got the thing going. It was right around when the reunion sort of kicked in.
Right. That's true.
2016.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Or 7 years or so.
Wow. Craziness, man. Well, we are going to go back tonight to the last show that we're going to be reviewing from the amazing year that was 2003.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about 11-8, November 8th, Roseland Ballroom, New York, New York, the Big Apple.
New York, New York. Yeah, another great show, man. Another great show.
So now the last show that we talked about was Penn's Landing, which was sort of the end of the summer tour for 2003. There was a little bit of a break, and then they started fall of 2003. So this show is sort of like right in the middle of it. At the end of September, they would start the fall tour. So all through September and then throughout October was the West Coast, the South, and then they sort of brought it back up to the Northeast for the beginning of November.
Yeah, and then this is also just a few days prior to the Vic Theater run in Chicago, which would be used for the Live in Chicago DVD.
Right, so this is the first, and then the Vic Theater run was the 7th, 8th, and 9th. So those were the shows that were used for Live in Chicago. So the set lists are pretty similar around this time period, and just like a lot of amazing songs. The band is really like on fire and like at the top of their game, as you can tell when you watch Live in Chicago.
Yeah, dude.
Is your cutting board dried out, ugly, and lacking luster? Do your tables have too many water rings to count and need a fix? Are your kitchen utensils old and damaged? Maybe you just want to add a little bit of natural wood beauty to your home. Whatever it is, you can count on West Brandywine Woodworks to provide for you. We make high-quality custom hardwood items for your home. From cutting boards to shelving, West Brandywine Woodworks has you covered. Find us on Facebook and Instagram. Mention Weencast when you order for 21% off. So give us a like and a follow, and don't forget to mention Weencast for 21% off your order. West Brandywine Woodworks. Custom simplicity for your home.
Hey, this is Shane from Weencast. Don't forget to join us on Patreon for our ongoing series, Shane's Ween Vinyl. I discuss all of the Ween and side project related pieces from my record collection, including albums, singles, compilations, and more. I talk about how I acquired them for my collection, fun facts about the record labels and production credits, and of course, which pressings I have and how they sound. So head on over to patreon.com and search Weencast to keep that brown spinning round at 33 or 45. Thanks. So, Rory, this is one that you did not make it to.
No, and you know, I don't know why that would have been, but what day of the week was this?
I think it's a Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, I want to say I was back in school, and maybe I just decided I was too busy to go or couldn't afford to go.
You know, I'm not sure. So basically, we'll talk a little bit about, so Hannah and I went to this show. So basically, Hannah is a friend of all of us, of mainly Rory and Amy. And I don't know how far in advance we had talked about like doing this. Maybe we just saw that it was like a show that was on a weekend and was like, oh yeah, like we could, you know, we could pull that off or whatever. So I don't really remember like planning for it all that much or anything like that, or if it was just like a spur of the moment, like maybe like the weekend like previous to that, that we just sort of like, oh yeah, like Ween in New York next weekend or something. I don't really remember.
So it's interesting because it's just you and Hannah, right? Like no one else went. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
It's just an interesting combo to be like, how did it end up to be, you know, because like then like, you know, Amy and I didn't go or anything. You know, it's like no one else went.
I probably was just trying to get my count up on you as far as shows that I was going to, that I would make sure you didn't even hear about it.
Although we had just gone to Carson Daly back in September up in New York.
Right, right, right.
So.
Yeah, I'm sure that we had talked about it or whatever. But yeah, it was like, you know, probably just another thing of like, you know, you guys were in at State College and I don't know. But yeah, so basically what happened is Hannah and I went from Kutztown to New York on the bus. So shout out to the Bieber bus.
Dude, I love that shit. When I saw that in your notes, I was just like, dude, that's like a classic Berks County move.
Oh yeah.
Get on the fucking Bieber bus to New York.
That's basically the majority of times I have traveled to New York City to this day were on that bus. You could go from, I think you could also take it from Reading, am I right? Like the bus would go from like four or five different stops.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember specifically for that trip, we went and we parked at Kutztown. There's a little parking lot there that you could park your car and take the bus to New York. And it would take you to Port Authority in Manhattan.
Dude, that's beautiful.
We did that a lot. Anytime that there was like something in New York, it was like, take the bus. And I don't think you can take that bus anymore. I don't think they offer that bus anymore.
That's a sad state of affairs, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it is.
The old Bieber bus. I, you know, some of these talking about these old shows reminds me how much I used to rely on the bus.
Yeah.
So that's great. I love that you guys use the Bieber bus. And then, how late did it have, like, you could kind of come back at certain times kind of thing? Like, oh, there's an 8 o'clock, there's an 11 o'clock. What time was the return bus?
I don't know. We stayed overnight in New York because Hannah's brother had an apartment at the time, basically, like, in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So he let us stay at his, and he wasn't there. I don't remember exactly where he was, like why he wasn't going to be there, but we were able to stay at his apartment that night. And gotcha. Then we took the bus home the following day, like the gotcha. Following morning.
Oh, I'm sure you can arrange whatever ticket, you know, but I know that those, some of those bus routes will have like a couple times in the evenings, like, oh, the return buses at these times.
I mean, I think it probably went until like 10 o'clock at night or something like that. I don't think it would be quite as late as like a train because mm-hmm. of like the length of the trip.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you could take it as late as like 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, but probably like 10 o'clock would be like the last one to come back. I don't remember.
Gotcha.
But yeah, we took that bus a lot.
Man, back in the day.
Yeah, man. So anyway...
So there you are. You got it. You up to Manhattan.
And I want to say, you know, we may have taken like the very first one that left from Kutztown, because basically like we were in New York for like the whole day.
Yeah. Nice.
With, you know, no real agenda. I have a funny little story. The main thing that I wanted to do, that we wanted to do, I had talked about doing was, I still to this day, I've never been to the Museum of Modern Art. And I had this little fold-out map of New York City that I probably still have floating around somewhere. It was this. Do you remember that?
The map?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I did.
That little New York City map that I had. It was like a reusable, like laminated thing that like folded out.
Maybe if you show it to me.
Okay. So I had this little New York City map that I used like around that time period, like the late 90s, like early 2000s for like every time we went to New York City. And earlier this year, at the beginning of 2003, my brother and I went for New Year's Eve to see Phish.
Oh, man.
So that was 2002 to 2003. And I think we took that same bus, actually, now that I think of it.
The Beaver bus lives on.
But I had this cool little like fold-out map. It wasn't like a big fold-out thing. It was just like a little like pocket map. It was just small enough that like if you had to like get it out, you wouldn't look too like touristy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was sort of that kind of thing, right? And that had on there the address for like all of the museums and, you know, notable points of interest, right? So that was like what I used. I was like, okay, yeah, like here's where it says Museum of Modern Art, blah, 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 right? So Hannah and I walked from Port Authority to, I can't remember exactly where, I think it was, might have been in the same area as where like Roseland was, because I think it said that it's on, the location is somewhere on 53rd Street. But I'm not exactly sure like how far away from there it originally was. Mm-hmm. But we got there and we're looking around and we're looking around and we're like, where the hell is this place? Right. And, you know, you can only like stand around and stare for so long before you look stupid and you're feeling like, oh, man, somebody's going to start, you know, coming up to us. So I remember asking a police officer who was standing on one of the corners as we were walking. I'm like, sir, where is the Museum of Modern Art? And he only gave me a one word answer. Just Queens. And I was like,
it's in Queens.
Excuse me, what? And he's like, Queens. And I'm like, okay. There was no way he was going to answer me in any other like capacity other than that. Like there was just, you know, that's all he was going to tell me. I knew that right away. So we started like walking down, the street, you know, again, like, okay, let's just go down this street or whatever. And I'm like, no, like the map says it's supposed to be like right in here. Like what's going on? Like, what's the deal?
Well, he said Queens.
I remember we found like a doorman. I'm like, let's ask this guy. I'm like, these guys know what's up. Right. So sure enough, you know, I'm like, hey man, I'm like, we're trying to find the Museum of Modern Art. Like, what's the deal? Like it was supposed to be like right on this, you know, intersection up here. And he's like, ah, they moved it to Queens. And I'm like, what do you mean they moved it? Like what? Right. So, so without knowing that this had happened, I did a little bit of research. Okay. And sure enough, there was a massive renovation that happened in like the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So from May of 2002, to November of 2004, it was located in Queens, and the Manhattan building was completely closed for renovations.
Yeah.
We were there in November of 2003.
Right smack in the middle of it.
Ridiculous or what? Ridiculous? That goes to show you how you need, even back then, you need to check the website, you know?
you're just MoMA.
Yeah, you can't guarantee it's gonna be there when you get there. You know what I mean? It's not.
they moved the museum. And when you're on foot,
yeah,
you know, I dare say, and it's not like, you know, you want to be like, oh, okay, let's just go to Queens.
Yes.
I mean, I guess you could. Yes.
No, I mean, there was no.
But that's like a whole thing, man.
Right, right, right. There was no way we were going to leave like Manhattan to go to a different like borough. And, you know, mm-hmm. There was no way that was going to happen. So basically what we decided to do was we went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is near Central Park instead. And I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah. What was there?
The El Greco exhibit was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that ran from, I looked this up too, from October 7th, so it was fairly new, until January 11th of 2004. Absolutely mind-blowing. And just, these paintings were so old. And a lot of them are just, like, massive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just, like, amazing artwork that you can't even believe you're standing in front of. I mean, a lot of religious material. He lived from 1541 to 1614. I mean, just think about that for a second. Though that's when his artwork is from.
Yeah, dude. Pretty old school at this point.
And a lot of those paintings, like, they've preserved and they survived and they were there, you know, to be seen. I think the Met has a decent amount of his stuff just, like, in their permanent collection, mm-hmm. including a really famous painting called Opening of the Fifth Seal.
Sounds mysterious.
Which is really amazing. And a lot of these things are just crazy huge in size. 6 feet tall, 7 feet tall, larger. I mean, just absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So we were very, very lucky that things worked out in that way, that MoMA wasn't there and we were able to catch this exhibit at the Met. The only other thing I remember about that was I totally pulled a Homer Simpson, because they have a very suave way of trying to get you to pay their suggested donation. I mean, you can go into the Met for basically nothing, right? You know, you're just making a donation of whatever you're able to give, but they have a way of, oh, okay, there's two of you, so tick, 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 tick. That will be, and it's supposed to be like $25 a person or something. That's what they want you to pay, right? So I think it was, I don't know, it was supposed to be like $40 or something, like 20 for each of us or something like that. And I think I gave them about a total of about 15 bucks. just like, and that's what they took, and that's what you paid.
Dude, gotta save a couple bucks.
Hey, man, I didn't have a lot of money at the time. You
gotta
save
a couple bucks for the poster later on, right?
Yeah, right. It's like, I need money for the Ween show, you know? Like. So it was really worth it. And if I ever go again, if I take my kids or whatever, I'll pay the whole amount. So I will make it up to the universe one day. So
is it going to be like that Simpsons episode where they're in New York? Homer's just like out to get everything.
Oh, yeah.
Or convinced everything's out to get them.
Do you remember the one I'm talking about, though, right? Where he's just like, so what if I choose to pay zero? Read the sign. You don't have to pay.
Nice.
So anyway, so I do remember sort of getting to Roseland like fairly early. We must have stopped to like eat at some point, but I really don't have any recollection. I just remember going to the museum and then going to the show.
Yeah.
The stuff that's like sort of in between there, I don't quite remember. But I do remember going to Roseland fairly early and talking to people like in the crowd and stuff like that as it filled in. They had, this was the first time I had ever seen anything like this. They had promotional posters for Quebec. Mm-hmm. And we'll post some pictures and stuff. You can see them floating around online that were autographed by Jeaner and Diener. And they're pretty big. It's like a tall, skinny poster with like the orange coloring of like their faces in that, you know, drawing from the front of Quebec. Mm-hmm. You got one of these free when you bought the CD, okay? And for whatever reason, Hannah bought one of the CDs and I didn't because I had already had one. And just looking back on like that whole concept, I just don't know why I didn't just buy another one just to get the poster.
I know, dude, like a rinky-dink CD. Who cares?
I want to say it was more about just like an idiotic integrity sort of thing. Like a dumbass, like, I keep it real, you know, Dave Chappelle moment than anything else.
I'm not buying two CDs.
Yeah, like,
they can't get me to buy two CDs.
No, because I already got it. I'm a true fan. I've had it since the day it came out. So there. Like, what an idiot. I also didn't realize, like, we should just take the chance of, if something happens to the poster, like, oh well. Because I think in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, how am I supposed to keep this poster nice through, like, the show and get it out of here in one piece?
Yeah.
And I think Hannah was just kind of like, well, I'll just take that chance. You know what I mean? I also think she had, like, a little, like, mini backpack. So it was like, well, I'll just roll it up and put it in there and, like, hope for the best. Mm. You know? So I should have just done the same. I'll save a little mini story for after we talk about the show for the end of the podcast. But speaking of posters, there also is one for this show, and I don't remember them having that for sale there that night. It is possible that they did, and we'll make sure to post some pictures of that, but you can see it on Brown Base when you look at this day, and basically it's just like a chick with like a like halter top t-shirt and just like a huge rack.
She's doing all right.
Yeah, she's okay. Like it's kind of one of those things where it's like whoever the artist was who did this spent about 10 seconds on the girl's face and about 2 hours on making sure that the tits were perfect. So it's one of those things when I look at it, it's like, would I have been able to purchase this poster right in front of Hannah without being embarrassed? I don't think I would have been able to.
You do what you gotta do.
I don't remember them having that. I don't remember them having that there that night, but I don't think I would have been able to pull the trigger on that poster anyway, out of, you know, sheer embarrassment. So,
oy vey.
Yeah. So that kind of takes funny. Us up to the show. Just to talk about Roseland for a second or two, it was a lot like the Electric Factory in Philly, sort of a skinny and long venue with sort of like risers on the left and right. I wouldn't call them like balconies per se, but just sort of like a short, like small area on the left and right where you could have people also other than the main floor.
Mm-hmm.
A cool place, but you know, one of the main things that I remember about Roseland is I was a big David Letterman fan. I still am. But whenever he would be outside doing something on 53rd Street, like if they had like the dogs like running up and down the street or something like that, or he would be out like chasing like taxi cabs or something, you would almost see it like every time. The building was right on the other side of the street from the Letterman building. And you could see that it would say Roseland on the side of the building.
And this is apparently Ween's only show at Roseland Ballroom. And then also I read that the Roseland Ballroom closed down in 2013 or 2014.
Yeah, it's not there anymore. Terrible shame.
Adios, mi amigo.
All right, so do you want to read the set list?
Yeah, dude, I'll read the set list. All right, Ice Castles, The Golden Eel, Baby Bitch, Piss Up a Rope, Hey There, Fancy Pants, Take Me Away, Waving My Dick in the Wind, Voodoo Lady, Exactly Where I'm At, Mutilated Lips, Happy Colored Marbles, Roses Are Free, The Argus, Bananas in Blow, Touch My Tutor, You Fucked Up, I'll Be Your Johnny on the Spot, Tried and True, a little mini acoustic set, Tried and True, Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain, and Birthday Boy, and then back to Full Electric with Buckingham Green, Spinal Meningitis Got Me Down, Zoloft, What Diener Was Talking About, The Mollusk, Ocean Man, Freedom of 76, Pandy Fackler, Big Jilm, Booze Me Up and Get Me High, The Blarney Stone, All of My Love, and Dr. Rock, and If You Could Save Yourself, You'd Save Us All.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. It acquits itself well.
So it's 34 songs total.
I forget how long the show is. I don't know where I saw that, but 2.5, 2:40, I want to say. But, dude, it's a solid show, first off. And, you know, something that I wanted to point out is that Ice Castle's the opener, and it goes into Golden Eel. And that's interesting because that was totally like a style of the time, that the number of times that Ice Castle has been an opener, most of those times were like back in like 03 and 04.
Right.
Yeah. And then also it was like mostly like would be Ice Castles going into Golden Eagle whenever they opened. So it was kind of cool that you got in on that combo because that was totally like a thing that time during that era.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how Ice Castles is like this weird like portal into like the songs around it or something.
Yeah.
You know, because we talk a lot about how it's typically Ice Castles into Final Alarm.
Is what it's become more recently.
Right.
Is when you see a lot.
But you're right. It's like when you go back and you look at some of the set list and like, you know, the songs surrounding that song, it almost is always like paired with something else. So this is crazy.
In that case, you know, I don't know if I've necessarily noticed that. I mean, there might be other songs where that's the case. But, you know, like Booze Me Up and Get Me High and the Blarney Stone, I bet you those are linked up a lot. That'd be interesting to check that.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
But I don't think that's true for like every song. And I think it's notable because it's almost like Ice Castles. It's like they've always played around with the idea of that being, like you said, a portal. Like some kind of like it connects with whatever song it leads into.
Right. But, you know, it's like, for what reason? Because it's just like an instrumental thing. Now, Final Alarm, I could kind of see because, you know, Ice Castles is a nice, like, slow jam.
Yes.
So if it's like in the middle of like the set, you want to like bring it back to the rockin' shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes a little bit more sense. But Ice Castles into Golden Eel, it's like, what? Like, why? You know, why was that ever a thing?
To open a show.
It apparently was.
Yeah, it happens a whole bunch of times in the fall of 2003.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah. The set list has a lot of, like, pretty common tunes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely, like, a handful of cool, like, rarities and highlights. And the first one that you come across is Hey There, Fancy Pants. Because this is actually only the fourth time that was ever played. And that's a song that, along with some of the other ones on this show, at this show, was kind of played just around that time period when Quebec was coming out, and then really only was played a couple times since then.
Wow. It's one of the only ones from Quebec that by this time hadn't gotten just like the regular rotation.
Oh no, this is only, you know, fourth time.
Yeah.
It ends up being only 23 total.
Wow. Yeah, man. It's nuts to think like one of those Quebec songs is still to this day like that rare.
Yeah, dude, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's like it's one of the ones that was never really like done all that much, even up till now, because we're talking almost 2 years that the Quebec stuff is being played. Because, I mean, we started talking about the Quebec songs at the beginning of 2002.
Yes. And I think it was played at the Conduit in 2002, I want to say. Yeah. And then I know that you saw it twice, two of the first four times. I think that was the other one.
Yes.
But that's what's cool is it go from 02 and this is 03 then. And then after 03, it's only played a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like they sprinkle it in there a little bit during the Quebec era. And then after that, they just sort of they give up on it.
Yeah.
It's interesting pairing that with Piss Up a Rope, thinking of songs as pairs, you know?
Yeah, those two should frequently go together. Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of work? Well,
yeah.
Hey, their Fancy Pants only 23 times total. There's no, there's not much history there. But they seem to go together well.
There seems to be a lot of banter back and forth early on about something to do with Jeaner's underwear or his pants are falling down. I don't know. Maybe that's why they broke out Hey There, Fancy Pants. But in the first like 2-3 songs, I swear they bring up underwear like 4 times. And it's just like, dude, what the fuck are you guys talking about?
I didn't catch that.
Something about Junior chose the wrong underwear for the show or something like that. His pants were falling down, needed a different pair of underwear. It's like, dude, what? So maybe that's where Hey There Fancy Pants comes in.
They're saying all sorts of whack shit. At one point, Diener, right before Waving My Dick in the Wind, is like, oh, it's been a long time since we've been here. But they've never been at Rosen Ballroom before that.
There is a cool line, which is from Stevie Wonder, Living Just Enough for the City, that Diener busts out. I think it might be after the second song, where he just says, like, New York City, just like I pictured it. Skyscrapers and everything.
Nice.
So that was always I remember that line too. I remember that him saying that. It's just like, ah, Stevie Wonder reference. Nice.
That's great.
There's a lot of weird banter, and I think they're just happy to be back in the Northeast and just kind of like, oh, it's great to be back. It's like, well, if they've never played here before, but I think they just mean back in like the tri-state area.
Yeah, I mean, New York City's not that far from New Hope and home for them.
Yeah, you know, like, Philly.
And they have they've played a lot in New York, so, over the years.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately sort of like what they're getting at, because they bring that up a lot, like good to be home, like good to be back kind of thing.
It feels more like home. Yeah, because they've been on the road shit ton this whole year already, and in particular, right before this, there was a lot out west. But then even the tour before that, I think, I want to say, I mean, it had some Northeast shows, but a lot of shows out on the road.
Right, right, right. A lot of touring throughout 2003.
Yeah, dude. And they're not done yet, man. Damn. they still have another week, and then they go overseas.
Wow.
Like after this Roseland Ballroom show.
Yeah, crazy year, man. But there's also some good moments of jamming and stuff throughout some of the regular songs, like Waving My Dick in the Wind, Voodoo Lady, of course.
Oh, Johnny on the Voodoo Lady is, yeah, that's totally jammed out. You know, there's like a grittiness to some of the jams in this, at this show. And it made mm-hmm. me, it had a very club feel.
Yeah, man.
That I thought really it was really contrasted well with the Penn's Landing show from the last show that we did covered.
Right.
And the same was true, like Johnny on the Spot.
Yeah.
Just how Diener just like 90% of the song is just him just like shredding it on the guitar.
Yeah, he definitely tears it up for Johnny on the Spot, which is really nice.
I really liked his on the acoustic, his solo work on Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain. That was really good.
Yes. Well, before we get to that, though, so the Argus is really nice.
Oh, yeah.
So the Argus, how many times has it been played up until now?
This is the 15th time.
Okay. So not as many as, you know, something like Zoloft or whatever, and not quite as rare as, you know, Hey There Fancy Pants, but sort of like right in the middle.
Yeah, they just started breaking it out, I think, because they probably decided they were going to have it on live in Chicago. They were like, we're going to start playing it for this tour.
That's probably right on, yeah. This is a really nice rendition of Argus. And, you know, that's kind of one of those ones where it hasn't been played too many times, so people are quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can really hear that nice, because there isn't a lot of crowd noise and whatnot. It's a nice, quiet song for the most part.
Well, it's such an epic tune, you know, when quiet, you know, like it's got
right
such a beautiful song.
Yeah.
By this time, people know the album, and this is one of those like, oh my God, it's the Argus.
Right. And people kind of know like to shut up. So that's nice. Yeah. They do a couple of acoustic tunes. They start off doing Tried and True, which is really nice acoustic. And there again, you haven't really seen that too many times up until now.
We had just seen it in Philly.
Right. They didn't do quite as many acoustic songs as they did in Philly, because that was, what, 5, 6? But Tried and True is really beautiful. And kind of a rarity from the country record, Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain.
Yeah, dude.
So that's definitely a highlight for this show. And you're right, the guitar, Diener can shred on acoustic too, man.
Yeah, dude, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
Just
that's a sweet rendition. And then Birthday Boy, which they had opened the Penn's Landing show with. So that's a really nice one to break out acoustic as well. That really lends itself well to being an acoustic song.
Yeah. And then just like in Philly at Penn's Landing, the first song they play after they go back to full electric is Buckingham Green.
Break out the whooping stick once again. So...
Dude, and they have at this point, Common Zoloft, but it's well done. It's very well jammed out. You got some spacey guitar, spacey piano.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn getting spacey. But it's pretty much like, you know, you could take this Zoloft and just put it on a live disc and say, this is Zoloft. Like,
right.
It's a pretty good, pretty solid rendition at this point. Like, they got that shit down.
And speaking of Glenn, there's a lot of good Glenn on Pandy Fackler, of course. Sort of starts off just being like your traditional piano sound, and he just starts getting like weirder and weirder and weirder with it.
Oh, it's fantastic, dude. It's a great jam.
Yeah, it's a pretty sick Glenn jam on Pandy Fackler.
Yeah, dude. No, it's fantastic. In fact, there's not a lot of jamming throughout the night, but Glenn gets involved in a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, well put.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. Pandy Fackler's fantastic.
Big Jim, I could always hear. And then Booze Me Up and Get Me High, followed by the Blarney Stone. So it's like you got two of like the drunken songs to close out the night with. Two drunken sing-alongs to close out the main set. Now, come on. You know, are you going to complain?
It doesn't get much better than that.
And then when they come back, All of My Love, fucking Led Zeppelin.
Oh, dude. That's fucking awesome. You know, and that ends up being on Live in Chicago as well.
Right. Right. So when you look at this song, it's been played a total of 16 times, basically all within that fall tour of 2003. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of like right in the middle. It was the, I want to say, eighth time it was played.
Yes.
So this is the eighth time it was played, and I do have to say I had sort of heard some rumblings of it because, you know, at this time I'm pretty steeped into, you know, the Ween Forum and whatnot, and I sort of knew that was coming.
Yeah, totally.
But it does not disappoint. Now, and talk about Glenn.
Oh, yeah.
Glenn starts this baby off, and, you know, it's got awesome keyboard all the way through with the doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle-doodle.
Oh, he makes it. He makes the song.
He makes it fucking sing, you know?
Should I fall out of love, my fire will light to chase a feather, keep going.
for being sort of like the token cover of that time period or that fall, whatever you want to say, the fact that it winds up on Live at Chicago, it belongs to the ages, you know? Dude. It's right there on the DVD, and forever will it stay.
And they more or less just break it out just for that fall tour.
Yeah.
Because the first time I ever played was 9/27/03, and then they played it like almost every, you know, almost every night there. Well, you know, until you guys saw them on November 1st, and then they right. sort of play it throughout here and there throughout the rest of the fall, and that's it. And then one time in 04.
10/10/2004. So it wasn't even like it was like early on in the year or anything like that of 2004. It's later on in the year. And that was it. That's it. When you look at that song on Brown Bass, there's no other. They didn't bring it back since the reunion at all. Nothing. Yeah. 2004 was the last time that's played.
Yeah, dude, that's great.
That's pretty awesome.
And then, you know, same, you know, if you could save yourself, you know, the finale for the whole show, same thing with Penn's Landing.
Right.
And this is another one that was really just brought out during this time period and has only been played like twice since 03.
Right. It is another really good rendition of it, though. That's another beautiful song, really. I mean, it's a little bit more, you know, it's got the Crass lines and stuff, but.
This show has a good mix of, you know, the Crass and like the Crude, Who's Me Up and Get Me High and Blarney Stone and whatnot. And then also like the beautiful, like the Argus and like the acoustic stuff, like Tried and True, Help Me Scrape the Mucus Off My Brain.
Well, we can't help but compare it a little bit to the Penn's Landing one because that's the last episode that we did, but. You know, and it was only a couple months before this, so, you know, we're naturally going to kind of go back to the previous show in the history, whatever you want to call it. But I feel like Penn's Landing was a little bit more of like a gradual build, especially with the acoustic songs being the first things that they did.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really nice, like, groundwork, and then it just got, like, more and more, like, raucous and outrageous and rockin' and... you know, out of control. This is a little bit more of like here, there, up and down. And I feel like, you know, we talk about Ice Castles. Maybe that's something that plays into that a little bit because...
it's a little weird to open with Ice Castles.
Yes, yes. I know we've talked about shows where they've opened with Ice Castles before, and I probably said the exact same thing. It's like, why would you start the show off with something that's on such a slow tone like that?
Is that how the Metropole opened? Was it Metropole Ice Castles?
Probably.
Oh, man. I have to look that up now.
Now we're really going down an Ice Castles rabbit hole.
For some reason that sticks out. But yeah. It is, and then with, minus Hey There Fancy Pants, which admittedly is a beautiful rarity from this era. It's really just a string of pretty, you know, standard Ween tunes. And then you get the Argus thrown in there as well. But then again, it goes back to, oh, Bananas and Blow and Touch My Tutor and songs that are, you know, pretty common.
Right.
It's not until you really get like the second half of the show where you start to have a little bit more sort of shit getting sprinkled in there.
Right, right. Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely got some highlights and they're on top of their game. You know, like we talked about for the Penn's Landing show. But like I said, I think it's a little bit more like spotty. It doesn't really have a nice, like, thorough feel like Penn's Landing does.
Well, you know, this show has got, in some ways, it's got a little bit of everything. And I think about how that, like, you know, in the lead up to the Live in Chicago, it's got a little bit of everything. You know, there's a little bit of acoustic on there. They also got the old, you know, Prude block, the Booze Me Up, going into Blarney Stone, you know, like, and at this point, because they both make it on the Live in Chicago. So at this point, this is like Ween's like sort of saying, these are the songs that we want to put forward as, oh, this is Ween, you know, and this is like, this is how Ween, you know, finishes a set, you know?
Right.
Right. Like they throw these two together. And so at this point, it's pretty practiced, you know, heading into like just a week before Live in Chicago. But it's interesting how this show kind of has a little bit of everything, a few songs jammed out, not too many jams. And then a little acoustic stuff, you know? You got all of my love, like an awesome cover. Like Ween doesn't do a lot of covers. Although interestingly, this year they have a couple different, pretty good ones.
Yeah, man. So this is a good precursor to Live in Chicago.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so. It's a pretty safe set list is the way I would put it, minus the like handful of like rarities. But that leads right into Live in Chicago is a little bit of a safe set list, in a way. I'm not saying everything on it is, but like, it's a little bit more of like Ween greatest hits.
Right.
Although I don't know if, I would characterize this show as exactly the same way, but I do feel like it's pretty safe. Just like,
Right. No, it's pretty true.
nothing too far off the deep end, not anything too dirty brown.
Well, I feel like I was definitely glad to have had made it there. Unfortunately, the bootleg of the show is not quite up to snuff. There's a, it's not like it's unlistenable or anything like that, but it's hard to hear like the talking in between songs, which is, a lot of the fun.
Yeah, it's a little quiet.
Yeah, right. It's kind of hard to hear, some of the more quiet stuff and whatnot.
Yeah, so not all the music, not all the instrumentation comes out really clear. I felt like the
Right.
Penn's Landing show was a pretty good recording. This is not as good. But hey, win some, you lose some. I'm just thankful someone was there recording it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A couple of things I remember the rest of the trip was we had taken a cab. So I was kind of joking around with Rory as we were talking about this show, preparing for the podcast, that basically by the end of this show, I was like falling apart because I was on my feet all day. I was wearing, back then, I was a pretty hardcore loyalist to Converse All Stars or Chuck Taylors, like the actual, low tops, which is not quite as uncomfortable as the high tops, but I'm pretty sure I was just wearing my low top Converse All Stars all day. So I'm pretty sure by the end of the night, Hannah had to like hold me up. I was like, I can't. I was just like, Hannah, I can't walk.
Just marching all over New York all day.
Like I'm just cooked. Like I cannot move like at all. So we took a cab from there to her brother's apartment, and I couldn't tell you like where that was or anything. I don't remember like how far. By cab, I think it was probably like 10 minutes, But the reason I bring it up is because I think it was when we were getting out, I noticed that I had been sitting on something like as I like sat up and I'm like, what is this I'm like sitting on? I probably just thought it was like part of the seatbelt thing, and it was a cell phone. So someone had left their cell phone in this cab. And that was a pretty big deal back then. You're again, this is 2003. So, and this is just like a phone of the time, like a flip phone. Within the next like few, I took it with. I'm like, well, this is somebody's phone. I gotta try to, make sure they get it back, because I mean, I can't just leave it in this cab. It'll never find its way back to the person who owned it, right? So I took it with, and in the following days, I think I called like the first number or like the most recent number that was on there, got to talk to this person, got their address, and mailed it back to them.
Good Samaritan.
Well, thank you. And I think I had, maybe a week or so had gone by, 2 weeks or something like that, and I got a card in the mail, and I'm like, here we go, right? Like, where's my reward? Like, come on. And it was just like a card that just said like, thank you.
That's very sweet of them.
It was very nice. It was very nice. And you don't do that kind of thing for, for a financial gain. You do it to be a good person. So I'm not complaining by any means, but I did spend money on postage. So,
It's in a piece of your heart. It's
And
funny.
going back to the beginning of the episode, the beginning of the night. So within the next like week or so, I said to Hannah, "Hey, what if you lent me the poster that you got at Roseland,
Oh no.
and I'll lend you one of my shirts, right?" And she totally agreed to it.
ill-advised.
And I still have that poster.
So you got the poster in the end. Who's laughing now? The corporate man isn't going to make you buy two CDs. You already have that CD.
So I got my original copy of Quebec. I never fell for it by buying a whole nother copy of Quebec. And I got the poster anyway. So how about that?
Does Hannah still have that shirt?
I hope so.
Well, you never got it back, though. So she must
have.
No,
I never got this. I never got
this
shirt.
I wonder if she still
has
it. Hannah, if you're listening.
Oh, boy.
That's awesome.
But you know what? It was a fun trip. It really was. It was a great time. Oh, and one other quick thing. So the next day, we took the Bieber bus back, and I can't remember what time it was, but it was in the morning, you know, no rush.
No rush for the Bieber bus. You just get on your Bieber bus, you know, you just get on when you need to get on.
I also remember we sat all the way in the back, and there was a gentleman who was right to, like, our right, all the way in the back. And, you know, there's the little mini bathroom all the way in the back of the bus, right? Well, there was a gentleman who was, I don't know, four or five rows up or whatever, more like towards the center, I guess, who was blind and had his dog with him.
Mm.
So at one point, the man came back to use the bathroom and just asked the other gentleman who was sitting right in front of the bus bathroom, will you just hold my dog while I use the men's room? So he was like, yeah, I guess, you know. So he held on to the dog, and Hannah and I are just sitting right there. And as soon as the man went into the bathroom, that dog just started whining.
Aww.
Like, and, you know, we had to, like, help him, like, calm this dog down. And just like, he'll be right out. It's okay. He'll be out in a second. It's okay. He's right there.
But dude, once again, you're like the angel of Manhattan, you know?
Oh boy.
You're getting cell phones returned. You're helping helping calm down a blind person's dog, seeing eye dog.
And there must have been something else that happened earlier in the trip, because that man immediately was just like, this is the weirdest bus ride I've ever been on. And we just laugh with the guy. There must have been something else that happened, but I can't remember what it was.
Bieber bus tours, baby.
Just like those funny things that you remember about those, you know, those trips. But that's why we went to see Ween 11-1-2003.
Yeah, dude. Rosen Ballroom, man. 2003.
I'm glad I was there to see, you know, to see Ween, obviously, but and to see you know, them play All of My Love. But also, you know, another really cool venue, part of New York City history that isn't there anymore. So I'm just glad that I was there to see Roseland Ballroom and be there. I was joking around with Rory that I just did a image search of Roseland before we started the podcast, and like 100 pictures of the marquee came up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was sort of like one of those iconic New York things, you know?
C'est la vie.
Another thing that's just like lost to the sands of time, you know? So I'm very grateful to have gone and have seen something there, especially, you know, one of my favorites like Ween.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. You know, they've had over 1,000 shows at this point, only one at the Rosen Ballroom. Pretty cool.
So, that's all I got.
Nice, man. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, man.
And listeners, thank you for listening.
So, stick with us, because that's the last show we're going to talk about for 2003, but, you know, we saw a lot of shows the following year.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I think we're going to be, not to tip our hat, but talking about Quebec and possibly All Requests Live and Live in Chicago. We got 2003's icy claws are not out of our flesh yet.
We talked about it a lot in our Penn's Landing episode, but, you know, it's pretty true. This was just an epic year. The 2002-2003 era, I mean, it's pretty amazing and pretty unprecedented in terms of the band's history.
Yeah, dude, how they turned around from flawed, getting hurt like right as like they're getting down nuts and bolts with Quebec, and then to spring out of that into 2003 with the probably the single greatest year of Weendom history.
They were coming back in a serious way, you know. So
yeah, dude,
it's just a really amazing year when you look at all of the shows and the set lists and all of the things they were doing to, you know, launch Quebec. Just a brilliant year.
Yeah, dude, I concur. And Rose on Ballroom, I think, is a good representation of that sort of fall tour.
Yes.
And it's a nice show for us to kind of wrap up the year with.
Yeah, man. So if you haven't already, hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/Weencast. Or just go to Patreon and just search Weencast.
We'll come up.
A lot of great stuff on there. And it's all categorized now, thanks to Rory.
Yeah, collections.
I was just on there the other day, and it really does look nice. And
yeah,
I think it's
a
really great way of organizing everything. So tons of great, fun content. So join us over there. It's a lot of fun.
All right, people. Well, thank you for listening, and... sayonara.
Thanks, everybody.